Hey, today we're kicking off our brand new series that I'm super excited about, Love Dates and Heartbreaks. And as we jump into this real quick, I want to tell you who this is for. This is for students who want to date and hope to date. This is for graduates who want to date and hope to date. This is for singles who are dating. This is for married people who are trying to make their marriages better. This is for people who used to be married and are jumping back into the scary, awful aquarium of dating where it just seems so complicated. And it's not like it was when you were 18 and you're trying to figure that out. So this series is really for anybody who's in a romantic relationship, wants to be in a romantic relationship, hopes to be, and is trying to figure it out. And the thing is, I don't have to tell you this, it's complicated. It's complicated when you're 13, it's complicated when you're 16, it's complicated when you're 26, 36, or 56. And one of the reasons that I'm super excited about this series as well is this series gives me an opportunity to talk about something that breaks my heart. And, you know, a few years ago, I challenged you. I said, hey, what breaks your heart? Because sometimes when people answer the question, what breaks my heart, it leads to extraordinary change and extraordinary things in culture. And one of the things that breaks my heart has to do with what we're going to talk about. Because watching people make relationship decisions that undermine their relationships, that just breaks my heart. I mean, watching people make decisions about their own relationships, whether it's marriage or dating or whatever it might be, that I know, and I'm not super dialed in. I mean, most people would watch them and think, oh no, you're going to do what? Watching people make what's already complicated more complicated, making relationships that are already complicated more complicated, that just breaks my heart. There is already enough, isn't this true? There's enough unavoidable pain in the world. The last thing we need to do is to add to it with our own decisions. And like you, it's not just me. Sometimes I watch people and I think, have you thought that through? I mean, have you really thought that through? Or have you really ever seen that work out anywhere else with anybody else? I mean, it works out on Netflix, but I mean, in the real world, have you ever seen that actually work out in a real relationship, right? You've had these same thoughts. Or I think, has no one warned you about this? I mean, did your mama not warn you, or your grandmama, or your dad, or a friend, or a roommate? I mean, am I the only one trying to get in your way to say, hey, you need to think this through? And so it breaks my heart to see people unnecessarily complicate their future relationships with current relationships, or to complicate a current relationship with just a bad relationship decision. And I'll tell you who else I'm excited about to be a part of this series are those of you that are dating and you're kind of serial daters. In fact, you don't even like the word date. For you, if a date doesn't end with sex, you just chalk it up to a loss. You're just in that place where you're like, you know, one day, someday, I'm going to settle down, but that's one day, someday. It's not this day. In fact, you don't even really call it dates. That's something your parents did. It's kind of a dark ages thing. But you're in a season of life, and you're not ashamed of it. You're not bashful about it. It's just, this is just where you are, where it's kind of a use them and lose them, kind of rotate through, and you're not always honest, and you don't always follow through. And yeah, I'll call you, I'll text you, and you never do. And hey, you know, is it okay? Yeah, you go ahead. But then you're just in that world where you're just kind of playing the game. And that's your business because it's your life. But I just got to tell you, and you may not care, but that's heartbreaking to me too. And the reason it's heartbreaking to me is, and you don't have to believe this, is you're hurting you and you're hurting somebody else. And here's what I know about you, even though we've never met. You don't want to hurt yourself and you don't want to hurt other people. In fact, if I were to confront you, you would say, no, it's consensual. I'm not hurting anybody. But you know there's such thing as consensual hurt, like we're going to both agree to hurt each other. I mean, it's consensual, but if it's consensual and it still hurts a person, come on, it just still hurts a person. And you don't want to do that. And here's the other thing that concerns me about you, if that's the season of life you're in. I don't want you to be, and I made this up, so I don't know if this is like a real thing. I don't want you to be a liar for life. I don't want you to be a liar for life when it comes time to tell your story. Because what you're doing right now morally, what you're doing right now relationally, these are chapters of your story. And they are permanent parts of your story. And one day, believe it or not, somebody's going to want to hear your story, and you're going to want to hear somebody else's story. And depending on what you do now, you're going to be tempted to lie about parts of your story. And you're going to be a liar for life because you're going to have a secret, or you're going to have a series of secrets, or a season of life you don't want to talk about. And when it gets to that season, you're going to kind of, you know, smooth over it a little bit. And I've talked to too many women, guys, who married a guy and he told about half the story. And a year later, she found out the whole story. Or 15 years later, she found out the rest of the story. And she's broken and she's heartbroken because she didn't get a chance to choose you with your whole story because you lied about your story. And the reason you lied about your story, just to use an old-fashioned word, is you were ashamed of your story. You were embarrassed by your story. And here's the thing, I'm not getting on you. I don't want you to write an embarrassing story. I don't want you to write a story you're embarrassed about. I want you to write a good story. I want you to be in Walmart one day with your wife and you see that guy you used to date, ladies, and you don't say, hey, let's check out the toy aisle. We don't even have any kids. I know, but I think we should check out the toy aisle for just a moment, you know? I want you to say, hey, I want you to, and hey, this is my husband. And then when you walk off, you say, yeah, I used to date him in college. He was a great guy. Yeah, we dated a little bit in high school. She was just a fantastic person. Didn't work out, but she was just great. That's a good story. I want you to write a good story. And let me tell you another good story. Another good story is this. Hey, when I was in my 20s, I fooled around, I played around. But on this particular date, in this particular year, when I was this particular age, I decided to move in a different direction. And since that time, I've lived differently. I've lived in a different direction. Yeah, when I was 45, I went through a terrible divorce. And after the divorce, I went a little bit crazy, me and the girls. I mean, we just went kind of crazy, me and my girlfriends. But then you know what? I said, wait a minute, that's not the story I want to tell. And on this particular date, at this particular time, I changed the direction of my life. I began to live and decide in a different direction. That's a better story to tell. And you're writing the story of your life. And it's going with you. And I don't want you to be a liar for life because of decisions you make now. Because that breaks somebody's heart. And I don't want you to be somebody else's regret, right? When they tell their story, when your name comes up, I want them to say good things about you, don't you? And let's face it, when your name comes up, they're gonna say something about you. You know they will because you say something about the people in your past. And you're deciding what they're gonna say. And I don't want you to be somebody's regret. I want you to be somebody's, oh yeah, I'm sorry it didn't work out, but he was such a great guy. She was so great in her family, and she was, isn't that what you want said about you? And guys, I don't want you to be a hypocrite. And here's what I mean by that. If someone did unto your sister as you do unto the girls you date, you may want to do something unto them. If someone did unto your niece or your single mom as you do unto the girls you date, you may want to do something unto them. I don't want you to be a hypocrite. I don't want you to expect one thing for the people you love and treat women different than what you would want a man to treat the women that you love. I just don't want you to be a hypocrite. Here's what I know about you. You don't like hypocrites. It's one of the reasons you don't go to church. The church is full of hypocrites. So maybe you're right. Don't join us, okay? Right? I mean, don't let there be duplicity. Don't live a double life. Don't live with a double standard because ultimately that hurts you and that hurts other people. And that just kind of breaks my heart because it sets you up for trouble that you don't need in the future. And ladies, and I don't like to really talk to ladies. I've never been one, okay? So I realize as soon as I move in this direction, I step out on very thin ice, so I'll just kind of put out there and head backstage. But ladies, I don't want you to be treated like a commodity. Or let me say it the harsher way. I don't want you to allow yourself to be treated like a commodity. And many times, it's your decision. And you know what a commodity is? A commodity is something that's bought and sold and traded and sometimes eventually just discarded. And maybe depending on your life and culture and the way you've, you know, manage your relationships, maybe you started to feel a little bit like a commodity. I don't want you to feel that way. I want you to feel like someone who has extraordinary value and extraordinary worth, not just based on what God says about you, but based on the way that men treat you. And men, I want you, and this is kind of an old-fashioned word too, I want you to step up. I want you to be gentlemen. See, gentlemen is powerful. Self-control is powerful. Deferring to the wishes of another person is powerful. Kindness is powerful. Grace and mercy is powerful. And ladies, don't you wish there were more gentlemen? And ladies, I wish you would do whatever you have to do, whatever is in your control to decide. I am no longer going to allow myself to be mistreated because that just hurts you. If you get accustomed to being mistreated, eventually you begin to define yourself that way. And I realize that these values clash, and I realize that in our culture, it's very difficult to think that it'll ever be different than it currently is. But this series is about helping you begin to think differently about yourself and about your future. Now, there are two myths that kind of drive all this confusion relationally, especially when it comes to how we manage our sexuality and how we do dating and relationships and even within the context of marriage. And like most myths, once you surface a myth and look at it, you realize, well, that's just ridiculous. But these two myths actually kind of sit in the undercurrent of our thinking and our assumptions about relationships. In fact, they are really unexplored assumptions. And in any area of life, financially, business, whatever it might, you might do, whenever there's an unexplored assumption, it's a very dangerous thing because an unexplored assumption will inform your decisions, but you don't know it's informing your decisions and you make bad decisions. And these two relational myths inform so many of the decisions in our culture. And honestly, everything in our culture fuels these myths. But as soon as I state them, you're going to go, oh yeah, that's ridiculous. That's not true. But here's my challenge to you today as we start this series. These two myths for many of us actually drive our relationship decisions. The first one is this. You may have heard me talk about it before. I just call it the right person myth. The right person myth is not that there's not a right person for you. The right person myth is this, that once you meet the right person, everything will be all right. And all the married people grumble and go, yeah, that ain't true. That ain't true. Because I met him. It's not true. It's not, right. The myth is that once you meet the right person, everything's just going to be all right, regardless of what you do between now and then. The myth is this, I can play around, I can do whatever I want, I can treat guys the way I want, girls the way I want, I can just do whatever I want. But when I meet the right person, everything's going to change. The past disappears. So you think your problem is you just haven't met them yet. Or you met them and moved in with them, or you met them and you married them, but now things aren't all right anymore. And you are slowly coming to the conclusion that you must have chosen the wrong right person. And now you are looking out, you're looking for who? You're looking for the next right person. And when I say it that way, it sounds ridiculous. But let's be honest. This way of thinking fuels our relationship decisions, and oftentimes it informs the direction that we take when it comes to relationships. That I'm unhappy because I'm with the wrong person. You're unhappy because you're with the wrong person. So you just need to find the right person, then everything's going to be all right. That is a myth, that once you find them, everything's going to be just fine, right? In fact, not only is everything going to be fine, here's the deeper part of the myth. The assumption is that once you find the right person, everything's going to be fine, including you. That you think somehow you're going to quit all those bad habits. You're not going to be interested in porn anymore once you meet the right person, right, guys? That your insecurity is just going to go away. Your financial, bad habits, they're just going to go away because you're going to find somebody with a little coin and he's going to kind of help you manage all that. And it's just going to get better. If I could just meet the right person, not only is everything going to be all right, I'm going to be all right. I'm going to be a better person. I love the line in Casey Musgrave's song, thinking we will be fixed by someone else. Thinking we'll be fixed by someone else. Oftentimes, this fuels this crazy myth. And this idea, as crazy as it is, and even on the surface, you're like, yeah, that is crazy. This idea, it infects our decisions. And it fuels our fantasies. And here's what I mean by fuels our fantasies. When you think about the future, as you begin to daydream about what if, and if only I had stuck with her, and if only I had married him, and if only, and next time, if only, what fuels your fantasies is this, not becoming a better person. What fuels your fantasies is finding the right person. And it is a myth. Because, as you know, there is more, right? You're adults. There is more. There's more to a satisfying relationship than finding or even being found. We just don't hear much about this. This does not make great film. This does not make great television series. This doesn't make great reality TV. What makes great reality TV and what makes great film is people falling in love. That's what the whole movie's about. They finally find each other. You know they're supposed to be together. It takes an hour and 45 minutes for them to figure it out. And then they figure it out and they're together. And then what happens? The movie's over. We love being entertained by people falling in love. But here's what we know about falling in love because we're adults. Falling in love requires a pulse. Falling in love requires a pulse. If you have a pulse, you can fall in love. staying in love requires so much more. And this series is about the so much more. But of course, we're not entertained by the so much more. It's nobody's fault. It's just kind of the way it is. The second myth I call the promise myth. There's the right person myth and the promise myth. This myth maintains that basically when it comes to satisfying, you know, long-term relationships, that all we need to do is make a promise. That when it comes to relationships, a promise actually replaces the need for preparation. That a promise replaces the need for preparation. That you can commit, promise, or vow your way into a healthy, satisfying, mutually satisfying relationship. That you can vow or promise or commit your way into a successful future, which is ridiculous. And that everything that came before can be overcome with two things, a promise and a party. A promise and a party. You're going to stand at an altar and make a promise. Then you're going to have a big party. The past disappears. You're going to be a brand new person, a completely different kind of person. And you can promise or commit or vow your way into the future. And your spouse, your fiance can promise or commit or vow his or her way into the future as well. But promises, you know this, right? Again, you surface these myths. It's like, yeah, that can't be true. Promises are never a substitute for preparation, right? We know this in every other arena of life except relationships. We know this in academics. You can't promise yourself to a degree. You have to study. In sports, business, medicine, discovery, business preparation, preparation for a presentation. I mean, in every single arena of life, we know that in order to win, you have to prepare. I mean, no college basketball coach or no college football coach would substitute promises for practices, right? Come on into the locker room. We're just going to promise each other we're going to win. They wouldn't even substitute, right? They wouldn't even substitute, you know, emotional, passionate pep talks in the locker room for practice, because practice is how you win games. Every coach knows you don't promise to win games. What do? You have to prepare to win. And this is true in your relationships. But who teaches us to prepare? Or who prepares us for relationships? Nobody. Every single day we're told if you just fall in love with the right person, everything's going to be all right. And it's a myth. In fact, rationally, you know it's not true. And the whole idea that you don't have to prepare for something to win in something, you know that's not true, which means, and this is kind of tough to say, that when it comes to relationships, commitment is way overrated. Let me put it this way. I do doesn't mean you can. Saying I didn't. In fact, you know this because you have been to weddings, haven't you? You've been to weddings. You sat sort of toward the back, and they got up there, and I'll love you forever and ever. You're my sweetest. And they wrote their own vows, and they got lyrics of songs in there, and music's playing, and you're sitting in the back going, "Take luck." You know, you good luck. What are the odds of this? I mean, you're not trying to be negative. You don't want to be negative. Here's what you know intuitively. You know they're not prepared. They're not prepared because they haven't been honest. They're not prepared because they haven't dealt with their bad habits. They're not prepared because they're immature. I mean, there's a lot of reasons, a lot of it beyond their control. You just kind of know the odds of them making it. I mean, they mean well. It was a great party. Oh, my goodness, you know. And their vows were beautiful. But come on, we're adults. You don't vow your way into a successful future relationally. You have to prepare. Listen, especially if you've never been married. Saying I do does not make you capable. Saying I do makes you accountable. Saying I do doesn't make you capable, it makes you accountable. And here's the bad news. When you're accountable but not capable, you're miserable. When you're accountable, uh-oh, I'm stuck in this, but uh-oh, I don't know what to do with this, and I don't know how to fix it, and I don't know how to make it better, you're just miserable. So here's a brilliant statement. I mean, it's amazing, my intellect. If you aren't preparing, you won't be prepared. I probably need to explain that. I mean, it's pretty deep. Let me go slow, right? I mean, again, it's just kind of common sense, but I'm telling you, you know this. When it comes to relationships, common sense is not common. We just ignore all the rules that we employ in every other arena of life. I want you to be prepared. And for those of you that are in a relationship or you're married, I want you to start preparing because you're in. And yes, you love her and yes, you love him and you have kids together and you're wondering, can we fix this? Of course you can. But you don't fix it by just trying to, you know, do what you did in the beginning and try to keep falling back in love with each other. There's a way forward, and that's why we're doing this series. Now, this is where the message of Jesus just comes alive. This is, honestly, this is where following Jesus makes all the difference right now in this world, in this life, in your current relationship. You've heard me say so many times, following Jesus will make your life better. Following Jesus will make you better at life. Well, following Jesus will make your life better, and following Jesus will make you better at relationships. It'll make you a better boyfriend, a better girlfriend, a better husband, a better wife, a better parent, a better fiance, a better future husband, a better future wife. That following Jesus will make you better at life. In fact, following Jesus will make you better at life before you come to the conclusion as to whether or not you believe Jesus is the Son of God. Because Jesus left us with one relational principle that is so extraordinarily powerful, so defining, it's kind of the driving force behind everything else that we're going to say throughout this series. Because whereas the teachings of Jesus won't help you find the right person, primarily because people had arranged marriages back when Jesus came along, and by the time they were 13, it was all said and done, it was all buttoned up, and we didn't have much choice. But following Jesus, this is the game changer. Following Jesus will help you become the person. It's why every once in a while, maybe you've had this experience, you meet someone from your past. You knew them in high school, you knew them in college, you knew them in graduate school, you knew them at a previous job maybe. And years go by and you run back into them and they're different and they're good different. I mean, they're kind of cleaned up and buttoned up and their eyes are clear and there's happiness on their face. They seem to have their life together. And you start asking questions and you discover they became a Jesus follower and they're different. They didn't meet somebody new. They became somebody new. It's why sometimes when you meet people from the past, it's like you became a different person. Following Jesus will help you become the kind of person that the person you're looking for is looking for. Following Jesus will help you become the kind of person that the person who was hoping for was hoping for. Following Jesus will help you become. Years ago, when I first began putting together this material, the first time I presented it to many of you about 10 years ago, it's been almost 10 years, it's hard to believe, I had some conversations with some 20-year-olds in our organization, and a young lady shared a story. She said, I was at home, my mom was ironing, I was sitting on the bed, and I was going on and on and on and on and on about this guy I had met at this party, and he was incredible, and his job, and he was good looking, and she said, I was telling her that he was a Christian. And that he was like, Mom, I mean, he's like your kind of Christian, Mom. Like, he's the real deal Christian. Like, he doesn't just talk it. But he was talking about Jesus at this party, and I could tell his faith is real. And she was going on and on about this guy. He was just incredible. And she said her mom stopped ironing and set the iron on the ironing board and looked at her. And she said, honey, the problem is, a guy like that is not looking for a girl like you. And she said, I literally fell to the floor and began to weep. This was years ago. And that was the defining turning moment in her life when she realized, that's right. My whole approach to relationships has been, I'm going to find someone. It never crossed my mind I needed to become someone. My whole approach, every message I've gotten from culture is, if I can find the right person, everything will be all right. It never dawned on me that I need to become the kind of person that the person I'm dreaming of, hoping for, is actually looking for. Which brings us to this question for all of us, married, single, students, graduates, whatever season of life you're in. Are you the person? Are you the person you're looking for is looking for? Are you just looking or are you becoming? And Jesus says, follow me, you'll become. If you're married, here's your version. Are you still the person? Are you still the person they were looking for? Are you still the person they were hoping for? Or have you allowed life and kids and money and stuff and busyness and business to get in the way of what you were becoming, of the person he or she believed she was entering a relationship with? So, Jesus steps into the pages of history. We don't have time, but we can't even begin to imagine the culture he stepped into. Prostitution was a way of life. Prostitution was birth control for the Romans and the Greeks because they didn't want to keep adding kids to their family and dividing the money. I mean, the world that they stepped into is unimaginable. And in spite of that, Jesus introduces a brand new relational paradigm, a brand new relational paradigm that was a game changer beginning in the first century and eventually got the attention of the Roman world and became central in the life of Rome. And since then has circled the globe. A relational paradigm that is simple, it's compelling, it's demanding, of course it is, and it's also rewarding. And here's the coolest thing if you're not a Christian. When understood correctly, and unfortunately the church has made this more complicated than it needs to be, but when understood correctly, Jesus' relational paradigm is so powerful that you're going to want the message of Jesus to be true even before you believe it's true. Because it's almost too good to be true. In fact, it is too good to be true unless Jesus is who Jesus claimed he was. And there's no reason for us to believe he was who he claimed he was, except for one simple event, his resurrection that changed everything and put everything and reframed everything that he taught. So toward the end of his ministry, Jesus is gathered with his guys, and he's going to kind of give them this is part of that last minute, if you forget everything else, remember this pep talk. And these words I'm about to read to you that Jesus said, they didn't even understand what he was talking about. They could not understand this until after the resurrection. And as complex as it seems to us because we live in a different world, his words were so clear and they're so specific. And at the end of this passage, as I walk you through it, he gives us kind of our marching orders. He gives us kind of the North Star by which we should guide all of our relationships. And then we're going to come back next week and kind of tease it out and look at the details. Here's what he said. And he begins with an illustration that they were totally dialed into that we're immediately like, huh? Here's what he said. He said, I am the true vine. I'm like a vine. And my Father, God, is the gardener. And whenever Jesus told a parable, there's a God part, there's a Jesus part, and there's an us part. He says, okay, guys, here's how I want you to think about your relationship with me. I'm like a vine. Now, they understood grapevines. They totally got it. I'm the vine, and my Heavenly Father is the gardener, the one that's tending the vine. He, God, cuts off every branch that's plugged into me, the vine, that doesn't bear any fruit. Why? Because the goal of Jesus and the goal of this whole conversation is to explain how people get connected to Jesus and Jesus bears fruit through them. While, he says, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes it. Why? So there will be more fruit. So the goal clearly is some kind of fruit bearing, to which we say, what's the fruit? And he's going to tell us in just a minute. By the way, your life is bearing fruit too. Everybody's life bears fruit. It's your reputation. It's the outcome of your decisions. It's that story that you like to tell and the story that you don't like to tell. So the idea of our lives having a wake of broken relationships or healthy relationships or debt or financial security, we all have a wake. We've all borne fruit in our life. And Jesus is talking about something that's familiar yet unfamiliar because he's saying, I want you to allow me to bear fruit through you. So he says, here's what you got to do. And this is all relationship language. Remain in me, and I also remain in you. In other words, this is just his way of saying, stay close to me, stay connected to me, follow me. And then he tells us why. He says, you need to stay close to me and follow me because no branch can bear fruit by itself. It's got to be remain in the vine. Again, he's talking about something so familiar. If you take the branch off the vine, the branch dies. It doesn't bear any fruit. He says, if you're going to bear the fruit I want you to bear, you've got to stay plugged into me. And now the application. Neither can you, he would say to John and to Matthew and to Andrew sitting there, neither can you bear fruit unless you remain connected or plugged in to me. That we can't bear fruit the way that Jesus wants us to bear fruit unless we lean into him, or to use another word Jesus used, continue to follow him. And then he says to them what they've already figured out. By the way, guys, he goes slow for them. He doesn't want them to miss it. I am the vine. You've already said that. And you guys are these branches I'm talking about. And if you remain plugged into me and I in you, this is so cool. I want to make you a promise, he says. You're going to bear much fruit. You're not going to bear much fruit because you're going to learn how to be a fruit bearer. You're going to bear much fruit because you're plugged into and following me. It's why when you met that guy or that girl from your past, they were so different. And when you asked them, what's going on? They didn't talk about, well, I got up every morning, made a list of 5 things I'm going to become, and by golly, I became them. They just make it simple. They say, well, they don't even know how to explain it to you sometimes. It's just, well, I started going to church and then started reading my Bible and basically discover they became a Jesus follower and they're just different and they're not even sure they can explain it. This is the promise of Jesus. Plug into me, stay close to me, follow me, and one day you'll realize you have become something new. You've become something different. People will say you've become something better. And then he defines what he means by fruit. And this is so powerful. He says, just as the Father, this is it's amazing that he makes this comparison. Just as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. It's like, wait. Okay, you changed the subject. Okay, we're talking about gardens and fruit and vines. Okay, well, we're now talking about love. He's like, just hang with me. I'm getting there. Just as the Father has loved me, just as the Father has demonstrated his love through me, I have demonstrated the Father's love through you. Now, here's what I want you to do. I want you to remain in my love. The same word he used to talk about the branch staying connected to the vine. So it's like, wait, so God's the gardener, you're the vine, I'm the branch, I'm to stay connected to you. And when I think about staying connected to you, I'm supposed to stay connected to your love. Exactly. And this, and then here's the surprise. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love. To which we say, I knew it was a bait and switch. This is just all about commands and rules. I knew it. It was so relational. It was so warm and fuzzy. And something's going to happen in me. And one day my wife's going to go, oh, you're the man of my dreams. After all, I'm just going to become. And then you do what every church person does. Now we're going to talk about the Ten Commandments or some new commands. And I'm sure the guys sitting there with Jesus are like, great. I thought we were headed down a new direction. But you're saying if you keep my commandments, you will stay. You'll remain in my love. To which they're thinking, okay, you're Jesus, we're with you. So what are the commands? Somebody write these down. I bet there's a bunch of them. And here's the shocker. Here's why you should follow Jesus. Here's why you should considering follow Jesus, even if you're not sure who Jesus is. Jesus smiles, I think, and he says, okay, I'll tell you. John, write this down. My command is this. Okay, wait. Vine and branch, we're plugging in, you know, it's all about back and forth, and somehow it's all about the Father's love, and now we're talking about commands, and now you're saying there's just one command. Right. Just one command. All right, what's your command? Love each other. We don't even need to write that one down. We've heard that so many times, you know, that's not new, to which Jesus would say, hang on, I'm not through. Because this isn't just about love the one you're with. This isn't just about love. This isn't about, oh, if we just all get along and love each other. No, Jesus said, remember, this is vine and branch. This is a different kind of love. This is a very specific kind of love. I don't want you to just be more loving. I want you to love specifically. I want you to have a focused love. Here's the kind of love I want you to have. I want you to love each other as I, because this is about a relationship with me. I want the love that you have seen demonstrated toward you. I want that same brand. I want that same type. I want that same combination, that same formula of love to flow through you. I want you to love as I have loved you. Now, I'm telling you, sitting in the room that night, they had some idea of what he was talking about. But a few days later, Jesus would put on a demonstration of love, take their breath away, because it would take his breath away. And on the other side of the resurrection, it's like, oh, this isn't some kind of permissive figuring it out on your own kind of love. This is the kind of love where you put the other person first. This is the kind of love where you lay down your life for a friend. This is the kind of love where you defer to the wishes and the thoughts of the other person. This is the kind of love where you forgive regardless of what's been done and regardless of the offense. This is the kind of love that takes everything I have going for me and makes it available for you. This is the kind of love where I do unto you as my Father through Christ has done unto me. This is what Jesus means by abiding in him. It's not complicated. It's not super intangible, super spiritual. It is about learning how and allowing the love that God has for you to flow to others, specifically to those with whom you have a relationship. St. Augustine, by the way, St. Augustine is in Florida. St. Augustine is in heaven. Just want to clear that up, okay? St. Augustine makes this comment based on this unique, focused, Christ-like kind of love. He says this, he wrote this. He said, love and then basically do whatever you want. Love and do as thou wilt. Once you understand that the framework for all of your relationships, the framework and the guiding force and the guiding principle, the North Star of your behavior toward the people around you, the people that you're raising, the people that you live with, the people that you're married to, as long as you know the North Star is my behavior will be monitored through and looked at through the filter and the grid of God's love for me as demonstrated in Christ. He says, once you have that down, you'll figure everything out. That this is how you become. This is how you become a person worth looking for. This is how you shift gears from just finding. And if you're married, controlling, and conforming, and pressuring. And if I can just ever get her to act the way I want her to act, I'll be happy. And if I could ever get him to stop and to start and to begin and to stop, if I could just get him shaped into the image of what I want, then I would be happy. And Jesus says, that's never going to work. I have an idea. Just follow me and learn from me. In another place, he says, because I'm gentle and I'm humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, and you will find peace in your relationships. Because I want to teach you how to love as I've loved. And I'm telling you, when two people get on board with this, when two people embrace this approach to relationship, it's amazing what happens. This is how you become a person worth finding, but this is how you become a person worth staying for. This is, as we're going to see, this is how you prepare to commit. This is how you prepare to stay committed. This is how you make whatever relationship you're in better, because both people are becoming, and they're becoming in the same direction. And as we'll discover next time, there's fine print. Here's the thing that may blow your mind if you're not a Christian or you're new to this whole thing. That the kind of person that Jesus wants to lead you to become, if you become one of his followers, is actually the kind of person we're all ultimately looking for and all ultimately want to be or to become. That what you're going to discover when you open the pages of the New Testament and as we look at what Jesus says specifically, you're going to discover, that's sort of the kind of person I wanted to be anyway. I would love to meet a person who loved me like God through Christ loved him or her. And yeah, I would love to think, it seems far off to me, and I can't imagine ever getting there, but I would love to think that I'm that kind of person. Now, I get criticized for this sometimes. If what you've heard me say is, it's just all about love, that's not what I've said, because that's not what Jesus said. And if the whole idea of just love, we're just going to love each other, it seems so permissive, it seems so undefined, it seems like anything goes, then you don't understand God's love as exemplified through Christ. So what we're going to do next time, this is going to be fun. In fact, the next 2 weeks are going to be extremely practical, is we're going to look at the fine print, because there's always fine print, right? But here's the cool thing. This fine print will make you fine. Okay? It will make you worth finding and keeping. No losing and less weeping. Because when two people, this is why this is so important, when two people embrace the fine print, and when two people decide they're going to stay connected to the vine, the relationship gets better, and it gets fine, and it doesn't get better because they accidentally or magically found the right person. It gets better because they are becoming a better person, because following Jesus will make your life better. And I promise, following Jesus will make you better at life. So don't miss next week when we look at the fine print.